Let's take your calls this hour with Ellen Brown as we talk about the banking system. Her latest book is called Banking on the People. And, of course, we've been talking about the coronavirus as well. And welcome back to Coast, Ellen Brown with us. Ellen, the stock market continues to look very, very strong. What are your thoughts about that?
Well, I think it's being propped up. It's not really that, I mean, it can't be that strong. The businesses are not doing well. They don't have customers. What happens is the FANG stocks, which is Apple, Amazon, I forget what they are, but anyway, the big stocks are bought by, I'm not sure whom, by the government in some way.
The hedge funds and people like that.
The rest of the market.
The big money market funds and people like that.
The Federal Reserve, I guess they're actually buying stocks. They used to not be able to. I know the Swiss Central Bank was buying stocks, and the Japanese buy stocks, or they buy exchange-traded funds that prop up the whole stock market.
President said that this is his economy. Barack Obama says it's his. Whose is it?
We actually have two economies. The stock market economy is doing quite well, and that would, yes, be the president's economy. But the one that most of us live in is struggling, and it looks like it's going to be struggling more after this coronavirus. The Chinese aren't able to, they're a critical part of the supply chain, and that part is being cut off.
You agree with former Democratic candidate Andrew Yang that everybody should get $1,000. Tell me about that.
Yeah.
And that's a month.
Right. Well, that would be the money that would fill the gap between the money that's created and the money that's owed back in debt. If you look at a chart of debt, it's growing exponentially. So it's growing much faster than the actual money supply. So you've got to fill that gap somehow, and if you paid everyone $1,000 a month, the gap between what people have to pay their bills and what they need is a little more than $1,000 a month. So you'd just barely be allowing them to pay off their debts. In fact, what you could do is mandate that the money goes first to pay off debt, and since 80% of the population is in debt, then that money would just be extinguished. Money is created as a loan, and it's extinguished when the loan is paid off.
Goes straight to your credit card bill or something like that, huh?
Yeah. So it's not like you're flooding the economy with money. You're filling a hole in the economy where it actually needs some money. That would be the real economy, the producer-consumer economy. Right now, the Fed creates all kinds of money, but it gets trapped in the speculative economy or the financialized economy, the economy where money makes money. And the reason is because of the Fed's put. The Fed will not let the market go down. And therefore, producers, it's easier for producers to make money just by gambling, you know, just by putting their money in the stock market or whatever, than to actually invest in a company, which might be risky and, you know, it takes more work. So they're not investing in their companies, and the consumers don't have the money to buy more products. So they're not creating the demand that you need to stimulate productivity.
All right, let's go to the phones. Let's go to Joe in Long Island, New York. Welcome to the program, Joseph.
Hi, Alan. Great topic. First of all, on Wall Street, if I'm a Wall Street worker, Wall Street whiz, and my choice is to play the derivatives market or lend to a local pizza shop, I'm going to play the derivatives market, make as much money as I can. If I lose and get fired, I'll still have a lot of money. So why would I be interested in a local business and watching their loans at all? And then secondly, Alan, are you comfortable that the maintenance, say you get on a train, are you comfortable that the train is fully maintained, that the tracks are maintained, that it's totally safe?
Where'd that come from, Joe? Where'd that one come from?
Well, I'm just saying, I don't think the money is being put into the maintenance that should be. I think it's put into the stock market.
Oh, I think they're maintaining. We haven't had a derailment in a long time, thank God. But go ahead,
Emma. Thanks for the question. Yeah, I totally agree that banks do not have an incentive to lend to small businesses. And that's one of the major purposes of a public bank, a publicly owned bank, is that its mandate is to lend to small businesses, to lend to the local economy, to lend to the local government, and to eliminate the middlemen and to not speculate. And we have the one brilliant model of the Bank of North Dakota where it works very well. But in other countries, they also have strong public banking systems. We just don't have it. Like in Germany, the Sparkassen banks are, it's a little different model than the Bank of North Dakota. They actually do compete with the commercial banks, and the publicly owned banks are, they have boards that are represented by, they have representatives from the local community, and they're only allowed to lend right into the local community. They can't grow bigger and extend out into other communities. So their job is to actually lend to their local businesses, and that's why business is has been so. That's why Germany is such a strong economy relative to some of the other local economies.
10 shootings in Frankfurt today, including the perpetrator.
Yeah, and on the trains, no, they on the East Coast. I mean, we don't ride the train much out here, but when I'm on the East Coast and I ride a train, they're very shaky, and they often break down. Whereas in Europe, they seem to run much better. I mean, you do feel confident in a European train. It's very quiet, very smooth. And I was in South Korea where I was invited to speak at a conference, and their bullet train was just amazing. It's like dead quiet. Everybody's very polite. You know, you don't have a lot of noise on the train anyway. And it just, it speeds along at twice the speed of the regular train. Anyway, they've got it down, but somehow we don't have the funding. We don't have the funding because we have a different banking system, and our banking system parasitizes us rather than actually working with us, which is what a public banking system will do. And, of course, in Asia, the public banks are quite common.
Let's go to Michael in Virginia Beach, Virginia. Hi, Michael. Go ahead.
Well, hi, George, and thank you so much. God bless you, Ellen Brown. Ellen, George, and... Catherine Austin
Fitz. Yeah.
And myself, I propose that the three of us try to recover what she said was $29 trillion missing so that we could collect the whistleblower's reward of 10%, which would be $2.9 trillion. Now, would you recommend that when we collect our reward, we put it all in the Bank of North Dakota? Would it be safe there?
It's a lot of money. A lot of money, Michael, for the Bank of North Dakota.
Well, I mean, I'm serious. I'm very serious. I have a team that I've been building of bankers and accountants for 10 years looking at the danger of the global monetary system, and we are looking to be as safe as possible with the good Christians of the world who want to go in with us. Now, you seem to be strongly in favor of what they're doing in North Dakota. Are there any other states that we can...
Gee, it's the only one. It's the only state doing
well,
this.
What I would recommend, if you had $2.9 trillion, is you could form your own rather quickly. And you would be in charge of it. So you could determine where the money went. It could be FDIC insured.
I'd still put it in a big bank, Ellen. They're too big to fail. They won't let them fail.
No, I agree. The big banks probably aren't going to fail.
Michael, thanks for the call.
But
next,
the economy can fail. And we little people can fail.
The little people will be left out. Let's go to Randy in Bloomfield, Indiana. Welcome to the program. First-time caller. Hi, Randy.
Hello, George. How are you, sir?
Good, sir. Thank you for calling.
I wanted to thank Ellen Brown for stopping in.
Okay.
and I appreciate her input on everything. I wanted to give you a couple different perspectives on, I really appreciate you bringing up the coronavirus, because I think that people are downplaying this, and I really think that's a problem. So what I would like to do is, first of all, let's take a look at a few months ago. We were looking at a phenomenal amount of protesters in Hong Kong.
Yep. Where are they now, right?
That was a big deal.
Yep, it was huge.
And it was. Everybody knows that was a big deal. There were a lot of people protesting the government in China, and now, conveniently, with this virus, well, we don't hear about those protesters anymore. But here's the deal.
Good point.
We have a representative of our U.S. Congress who, his name is Tom Cotton, and he stopped forward and said that there is a questionable consideration about how this virus got started, okay? We have a United States representative actually questioning this virus, and I think it's time that people need to start bringing this forward, because there is a fish market that supposedly started this virus, but don't you realize, you see, we had to get that virus into the market before it became out of the market, and it started to spread like a virus contagion. Have you given this any thought, sir?
Well, Ellen, we've been talking about it tonight.
Yeah, I'm certainly giving it a lot of thought. Yeah, where did it come from and who did it?
And why?
To me, it looks pretty obvious that it's definitely genetically manipulated, and it does look like it's targeted to Chinese DNA. But the question is, who did it and why? I would be inclined to think it's above top secret grade somewhere. It's not our politicians. It's not their politicians. That's my guess.
It's either a deep state group
exactly.
that did it to get to China, or China did it and it escaped out of a lab.
Yeah. Well, it didn't look to me like it would have escaped out of a lab. I mean, that's just not, well, from what I've read, that's just not the way they run those labs. They don't put them in the middle of giant cities like that.
Let's go to Cynthia in New Orleans. Welcome to the program. Hi, Cynthia. We'll be talking about Marie Laveau pretty soon.
Oh, well, yeah. I spoke to you about a week ago, George. I love your show.
Thank you.
I am a forensic anthropologist, Ellen. I've been following this very carefully. You are spot on on a lot of things. However, I do not believe this originated in Wuhan. I do believe it was taken there out of the United States. I agree with Russia, the Middle East, and China. I believe that we're downplaying the number of plagues. I also believe it is genetically targeted, not just Oriental targeted. And that's my opinion. But now, in regards to that, this ID 2020 has been around since 2000, actually six, going into eight, and so forth. And it's already been distributed among many people. I don't know how many, because I'm not in that kind of a group. But I disagree with that as well. Now, there are areas in the United States, I believe, like Grand Canyon, Arizona, New Mexico, areas that you could run under the radar. How do you feel about people actually, you know, taking, just going off the grid?
God, I don't know if they can do that. We've talked about different programs like that, but it's difficult for most people to just pick up and go off the grid. I couldn't do it.
And I think they can, well, I don't know. I don't want to be too dark, but yeah, I think they will get us one way or another. I agree with you. I think it wasn't the Chinese. I think it probably did come from a U.S. lab. But then the question is, who has had control of the lab?
And access to it. That's right.
Yeah, there are levels of top secret that's above the pay grade of the president. And that's who I think did it. And whether they're even human, I can only say this on this show because I know, George, you talk about such things. I mean, it looks to me like something very deep and very dark, and not either of our elected governments, the people we know.
They must have the antidote for it. They've got to. What do you think?
Well, it is said that there was an antidote in Thailand. It was a combination of HIV. I mean, it was, you know, very heavy viral remedies, and apparently that works. And I saw a notice out of China that said they had downgraded it from, I don't remember what colors they used, but anyway, it was no longer the extreme emergency that they had downgraded it. But then you can't really know whether to trust that sort of thing. I mean, they may just be trying to calm the fears of the Chinese, but it's possible that there's, hopefully there's a cure somewhere.
Next up, let's go to Fausto in Toronto, Canada. Welcome to the program. Hi, Fausto.
Hi, George Norrie. Hi, guest. How are you doing?
Hi.
Okay, I'm kind of going to improvise, so pardon me if I trip. It's a Luciferian formula, if you will, for lack of a better term, that out of chaos comes order, as you were describing earlier on in the Coast to Coast show, that during some sort of a crisis, some people who might mean well may just drop their guard and do whatever they're told under the false sort of safety or under the false narrative of quick, the sky is falling, so hurry up and do whatever I say, quick type of a thing. Now, man has misused their knowledge for, man not so kind has misused their knowledge from the get-go, if you can recall, throughout history, from the beginning of time. Gunpowder was had originated, if you will, from firecrackers in China. Batons, pepper spray, those are misused as well. Now, knowledge of biology is being maybe misused with respect to biological weapons. As for microchip, which I suspect is the mark of the beast, because I remember reading the Book of Revelation, just as a source, so I'm not just spewing nonsense.
It could be.
Revelations. It says, that he that hath wisdom, I'm paraphrasing because I don't want to commit blasphemy, that he that hath wisdom, that hath knowledge, know that the mark of the beast is, I think, 666. So basically, at the end of the day, it equates to 666, and that no man will be able to buy nor sell without the mark of the beast, and warn to those who have children, meaning, well, it's going to be some rough day.
You've got it down pretty good.
So, yeah, since I was 7, I was trying to figure that out and decode it, also listening to this show. And in this part of town, we have a card system called Presto. I don't trust it, never did trust it. And the police were actually, without warrant, asking the transit system to point out names, date of birth, identify information, including physical addresses. They were tracking people all around town.
It's happening all over the place. We're going to come back with more calls in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back. Our final segment with Ellen Brown, her website, ellenbrown.com, and also publicbankinginstitute.org. You ought to be commended, Ellen, for your stance on this coronavirus and having the guts to come forward on that.
Oh, thanks.
Let's go to Diamond in New York City. Welcome to the program. Hi, Diamond.
Good morning, George.
Hi.
Good to talk to you. I want to talk to Ellen about something, but you know, George, when you said to the question, what's wrong with us? Why does everybody want to control us? It's all about the money. It's as simple as that, right?
All about money. They can't have enough.
All about the money. And this is what I love. I want to talk to Ellen about, because I got two areas that I'm concerned about. I'd like her opinion on it. One is Social Security and the other one's health care. Years ago, they used to say, a few years ago, they were saying Social Security and Medicare is going bust, you know, so they instituted a program to make the ones that were born after a certain date to get Social Security later, and that turned into some scoffers, citizens saying, well, then why should I contribute to it? It probably won't be there, you know, when I'm ready to retire. So they put that into the public. But then I saw a post with Pelosi discussing that the surplus that Social Security is taking in, that she wants to pay the national debt with it. So that's a lot of money.
That's our money. That's our money.
That's our money. Thank you. Yes. So I don't know now if that's fake news. I just saw it as a post. But if it is indeed true, right, that we have such a surplus, which I can believe that. Anyway, why isn't it given to those that put into the system? After all, it was instituted by Roosevelt, right? It was instituted for us to have our retirement benefit. All these officials, government officials, have tremendously wonderful pension plans and retirement funds, oh, whatever. But we have to be on a budget. Now, unless you've made strong income in your life, you can't afford to live on your Social Security budget that they put you on. And so if there is such a surplus, they should, like, prorate it, you know, share it with those that put in. Instead, they make a program, SSI, okay, which they give to foreigners that come in, never paid into the system, even though we have a welfare system in place, okay? So, and this, and why, okay, you want to talk about that, but I want to tell you about healthcare. Healthcare is another issue. I don't believe we ever had a healthcare crisis. We have Medicaid. And now Bernie wants to
give it to
Medicare
everybody.
For all. Too much information I'm giving. We got to concentrate one at a time.
That's okay. How about a question?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
The question is, if we have a surplus in Social Security, why don't they just do the honest thing, if they can do the right thing, and give it to those that have paid into the system and are retired, instead of playing this game that if you make so much money on your Social Security check, you could be just, you know, $30 over, you don't qualify for all these free benefits that Medicaid people get.
Should SSI be revamped, Ellen?
Well, I totally agree that we do have a surplus, and we don't need to pay down the federal debt. That's my area of expertise. We can do just, well, I mean, we do need to pay it down, but we can pay it down through the Federal Reserve. In other words, we can just pay the thing off, and it will not be inflationary. I mean, that debt actually is our money supply. So we've got a $21 trillion debt, and we've got a roughly equivalent money supply. That's where money comes from. It's created as a debt. The Japanese government has, or the Japanese central bank has now bought nearly 50% of the Japanese debt, and they're just holding it. So the interest then goes back to the government. It's the interest that's a problem. That's the thing that goes up exponentially. You could either pay it off, or you could just leave it on the books of the central bank and roll it over and over and over. And the thought is that if you have the central bank pay it off, that this will create inflation, but it absolutely didn't in Japan. Japan can't even get their inflation rate up to 2%. That's been their goal for a long time, and they can't get it up there, even though they have essentially monetized their debt, bought it off with the central bank.
Let's go to Russ in Portland, Oregon, west of the Rockies. Hello, Russell. Go ahead.
Hi, Helen. Tell me about derivatives. Isn't that kind of illegal betting that you're going to get money if the bank fails?
That's what they used when everything collapsed, Ellen, isn't it?
Yeah, well, it used to be illegal, and I agree it should be illegal.
But it's not.
At least it shouldn't be propped up by the government, but it is. And, you know, there are many things that we should change, but the powers that be, the big moneyed interests, don't want to change them, and that's why they're the way they are.
Can we have another collapse like we saw in 2008?
Yeah, I would think so. I mean, what can collapse is the actual businesses. If we don't have anybody to do the work, or we don't have, you know, supplies, or we no longer even have the skills to do the work, and let's say the Chinese can no longer do it because they're all struggling with the virus, we could definitely have an economic collapse.
Joe in the Bronx, welcome to the program. Hey, Joseph, go ahead.
Hey, George, how are you?
All right.
Good. Hi. Yeah, Alan, I have two questions, one on banking, one on the coronavirus. Can we eliminate paper checks or that through doing teletellers, you know, having everything be communicated over the phone lines or on computer, totally eliminating the need for checks? Okay, that's the first question. Second question has to do with the coronavirus and the death of the whistleblower in China. He was accused of rumor mongering by the government. Now, what light can you shed on that?
That was the doctor who died, Ellen.
Yeah. Well, apparently, I think the president was out of town or something, and when he got back, he immediately took all kinds of measures. But at the time, the whistleblower, it was thought that he was just creating unnecessary. You know, I mean, nobody had seen this virus before, and nobody knew how lethal it was going
to
be.
Right. He was just trying to warn people.
Yeah, but I think he actually just caught it. He was there treating.
I think so too.
He caught it and he died.
I don't think they killed him.
No. What was your other question?
About checks.
Oh, yeah. Well, we could definitely go on a totally digital system, and I imagine that's what's coming, but you can see the danger of it. That if it's centrally controlled and you don't have the option of cash, then they can turn you off if when they feel like it, which is what Aaron Russo was warning about. But I don't think in the U.S., I don't think people are going to stand for that. I mean, we're going to insist on keeping our cash. And so, like, this is a warning. If you see bills coming up where we get rid of cash, we need to keep it just so we can have some sovereignty.
Where do you see interest rates staying flat?
Well, the Federal Reserve thinks that one of their mandates, one of their two mandates, is to maintain the value of the currency, to maintain the stability of the money supply. And the way they think they do that is by controlling the Fed funds rate, which is the rate at which banks borrow from each other. But A, the banks aren't borrowing from each other. They're borrowing in the repo market, and that's why they feel like they have to go in the repo market. And B, keeping the interest rate down at 1.5% for the rate at which banks borrow does not actually control the amount of money in the system. I mean, we, the people, are still paying 17%.
Yeah, they're not paying they're not giving us the benefit.
So it looks to me kind of like window dressing, like that's what they're supposed to do, and so they keep on doing it. But yes, I think they will. They can't really raise rates because already people are so heavily in debt, and governments and corporations, everybody's so heavily in debt that if you raise the interest rates, you're going to crush the economy. And they tried that, and it did. You know, the stock market collapsed, and so then they reversed course, went back up.
Let's go to Mesa, Arizona. Amy's with us, first-time caller. Hello, Amy. Amy? Nope. The first-time caller hung up. Let's go east of the Rockies. Brenda's with us, though, in West Virginia. Hi, Brenda.
Hi, George. Hi, Ellen.
You're with us. You didn't hang up.
I wouldn't do that to you, George.
Perfect.
It's so hard for me to get through, I'd never hang up. Hey, I got a question about the money, but first let me tell you about a friend that's got a virus. He lives 2 hours west of Baltimore. He went to Walmart one night or one day, and the next day he was
sick.
Flu-like symptoms.
Jeez.
He went to the doctor, and the doctor told him he had a virus, but he had no idea what it was.
He couldn't say if it was just the regular flu, huh?
No, he just said it was a virus, he didn't know what it was, and that scared the crap out of me. How come a doctor wouldn't know what a virus was?
Well, if it's new.
He's been really sick for like a month now, and he's lost all kind of weight. He can't hold no food down.
Jeez.
He can't eat no more. He's really sick, and he was like a really healthy 55-year-old man.
He needs to go to the hospital quick. Get him in there.
Well, he's been going to the doctor. I don't know what else to do, you know?
Well, that's
But anyway, right. I just wanted to tell you, I thought it was really weird that, you know, you go to the doctor and they don't know what a virus is he's got, you know?
Well, that's not uncommon. Believe it.
Yeah. About the money, Ellen, I live on Social Security. It's almost impossible. But thank God I paid cash for my house. I got a house and 3 acres in the country.
Good for you.
I paid cash for it. I don't owe anybody a penny, and my credit score is 830. But I need to make money, and I just can't figure out a way to do it. I've been disabled since I was 17.
That's a great credit score, Ellen, isn't it? 830?
Yeah. Well, you sounds like you're doing all right. Hang in there.
Cash for a house?
Yeah.
Now, I've always been told that's not a smart thing to do. Borrow the money for the house. Don't use cash. What do you think? What's your
thing? I also own I bought my mother's condo off my brother's when she passed away, and it is very comforting not to have to have monthly payments.
Or a mortgage, but who knows? Okay, we've got a couple minutes left, and then we're going to wrap things up. Ellen, again, where can people get your books, Banking on the People?
You can get them on Amazon or Barnes & Noble or just the usual book outlets. Or my website is ellenbrown.com, and the Public Banking Institute website is publicbankinginstitute.org. And we have a newsletter if you want to sign up for it and get all the public banking news.
Let's go to John in Columbus, Ohio. Welcome to the program. Hi, John. Go ahead.
Yes, Ellen. I'm glad to find your very interesting articles on, I think, one of the greatest websites, globalresearch.ca, which has some of your articles occasionally. And I think there's a massive attempt to demonize China and Russia by the right-wing programs over this viral infection. And it's a situation where if they take extraordinary measures, they're called autocrats. And if they don't take extra measures, they're called criminal negligence. And then all of these other tributary claims and sinister claims against them is part of, I think, the deep state's attempt to impose what the Project for a New American Century of these elitists wrote a couple decades ago about with the demise of the Soviet Union. They considered a golden opportunity for U.S. imperialism to dominate every country in the world that isn't under the thumb of the U.S. banking interest. And one of those was Libya, which the United States destroyed because he was setting up an independent banking system and trying to find an alternative to the domination of the dollar.
Well, that's Saddam Hussein, too, did the same thing.
Right, the oil bourse that he was trying to set up. And they treacherously stabbed him in the back, had him obscenely tortured to death. And I believe that this is the key to all of our problems, the huge military-industrial complex, the $1 trillion a year that we are rewarding the weapons makers and war profiteers by this massive propaganda against countries that refuse to submit to the domination of the U.S. empire. There's a good article called The Gladio, G-L-A-D-I-O, Crimes of the U.S. Empire that I think will put people's hairs on. And if they begin to see what's really going on behind all of these terrible wars that we're into against countries like China that are just trying to trade technology and infrastructure for win-win resources. Well, we go around the world invading, bombing, subverting, strangling, sanctioning, and killing millions of people, and then blame China for the villain in the
piece. Well, I don't think, John, China is a saint in any of this either, believe me. Ellen, we are out of time. The clock is ticking, ticking, ticking. I want to thank you for being on the program.
Okay, thank you, George. It was great talking to you and to all your guests.
You take care of yourself. Up next, the magic of Marie Laveau, embracing the spiritual legacy of the Voodoo Queen of New Orleans. Denise Alvarado joins us. I'm looking forward to this. Get ready for that, and then we'll take calls with Denise in the latter part of the hour, next hour on Coast to Coast AM.